Great. So we are at the top of the hour. I'm sure others will join as well, but I do want to give us the full time to get into the information. So once again, just good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. We're very excited today to talk about HIV and early antiretroviral therapy and how that relates to HIV cure research, especially because it isn't exactly a cure. So we're lucky enough to have Dr. Chintanat Anwar-Rich with us today from the HIV military, from the military HIV research program, where she is the director of the vaccine research program there. And she's going to be leading us through some of this, what is early ART, and she has a lot of expertise in this area. So once again, welcome, Chintanat, and whenever you're ready, you can go ahead and begin.
Thank you very much, Jessica, and hello to all of you, and it's an honor to present today. My work has been in treatment of acute infection, early treatment, as well as HIV cure research in children and in adults in Thailand. And maybe we can go to the next slide. So we have an hour, and this will give us time to also talk, answer questions, and so please feel free to interrupt at any time. What I will be talking about is really what is HIV cure, how does early treatment fit into this landscape of HIV cure research, and what are some of the early treatment cohorts around the world, and some are in your countries. What are we doing, and how would that help in HIV cure research? Next slide. So maybe I'll ask you here, what do you think is an HIV cure? Like, when people talk about HIV cure, what does that mean to you? What do you think it is? I'll just stop for a minute for you to either answer by phone or type in to the chat, and then we can go on.
So just so everyone knows, we can go ahead and type into the chat function. And so we've had some answers come in. So eradication could be a possible HIV cure. People talking about no treatment, so we have that on the screen. And you can type into the chat function, and if you do want to speak, you can go ahead and hit *7, and that will unmute your line. But we do ask that for those participating on the web to use your chat function. So go ahead and do that.
Okay. So when we talk about an HIV cure, as the field of HIV cure researcher, in general, what we mean with that, if someone is cured, then they should no longer be at risk of transmitting HIV to other people. They would not have any worse progression of their disease, and they would not need to take medications. And next. So there are a few types of cure that we're pursuing. And next. So you might have heard of different terms when people talk about cure research. Some people talk about sterilizing cure or eradication. This is a tall order, and aside from the Berlin patient, who likely is a case of HIV eradication, we have not seen another case yet. But this is what we aspire to be able to completely remove HIV from the body, from the organs, from every cell in the body, and the person would be completely HIV-free and not need for medication. This doesn't mean that they cannot be reinfected, which is another issue that people talk about, but at that moment, that person would be completely free of HIV. Another goal that we have is called remission or functional cure, which is a more achievable goal, at least in the foreseeable future, is that the person would still have HIV in the body, but they would not be at risk of transmitting HIV to other people. They would not need to take medications, and they would be healthy. But the HIV still is there in the body, and so there is a chance that it could come back or start resurfacing in the blood, and then the person would need to go back on medication. But remission is a period of time in which someone can come off treatment and still be healthy.
So, Jason, there was a really great question in the chat function, which is, what's the difference
between... Oh, I don't see it, actually.
Oh.
So
the question is, what is the difference between an undetectable viral load and remission?
Yeah, so undetectable viral load is when we use, you know, the testing method that we have now, and we can't detect it. So it could be less than 20 or less than 50, but it's still there. If you use a very sensitive method, like single copy assay, you might find 3 copies or 5 copies. Remission is a condition in which people have undetectable viral load in the blood, but they're not on HIV medication. So undetectable viral load just means, you know, what it says is that you can't find the virus with the testing you're doing. But in general, people who have undetectable viral load are on HIV medications. In remission, they would need to have undetectable viral load, but not on HIV medications.
Great, thank you.
So, Jessica, why can't I see the chat?
I will promote you right now.
That's okay. Oh, you can just tell me as we go along. So next slide. So why is it so hard to cure HIV, you might wonder? And next slide. And this is because HIV is a virus that integrates itself or inserts itself into the person's DNA, into the genes. And so it's very hard then, you know, to get rid of that. And what is very important is that HIV is very clever. It goes into the cell, into the DNA, and then it stays quietly. Some cells just hide there without showing itself, and it can live, those cells can live a very long time. And so these cells we call latently infected cells, or most of them, at least in the blood, are CD4 T cells, or they're resting CD4 T cells or resting memory cells, different terms are used. And so these cells persist in the body and then, you know, constitute what we call latent reservoir, and it's very difficult to get rid of these cells. Next. So if you can imagine that all these flowers are CD4 T cells, and the cell that is infected with HIV, latently infected, HIV hiding away, is very rare. It could be 1 in 1,000,000. So that is represented here as the lighter color flower. And so it is very hard for the immune system to find these rare cells that are hiding among other cells that are not infected. And also the HIV medications only work when the cells are actively making more virus. And so if the virus is hiding quietly, then the HIV medications can also not kill the virus and those cells. So this is why it is very difficult to cure HIV. So another way to look at this is that when HIV enters the body, it finds the CD4 T cells, and cells that are activated, are active, they're easier to be infected. And so when cells are activated, can you click one more? When cells are infected and activated, I think it's nature way to try to control this, the cells then start to die. And so most cells that are infected with HIV and are activated actually die. But there are small numbers of cells that actually don't die, and then they revert into this quiet, quiescent state, resting state. And that those cells still have HIV inside, capable of being reactivated anytime. they then stay in the body for a long time, and then they can also increase in numbers. So there are more cells that have HIV inside the body that serve as the latent reservoir. So this process can go on for years and years, and it maintains the cells that are infected with HIV in the body. So when these cells that have HIV and they're in a quiescent state, they're latently infected, if for some reason they're activated, for instance, that cell that has HIV may also be the same cell that responds to pneumonia bacteria. And you have pneumonia, so that cell is now activated. So then those cells that have HIV can then produce more virus when it's reactivated. I think you click one more. And so then again you have this process of, you never know when these latently infected cells can suddenly be stimulated to produce more virus. And so it is incredibly difficult for the immune system itself to track this, to try to kill cells as soon as it reactivates, because it's so rare and it's hiding. And that's why, you know, the field is researching other types of therapies to try to help the body get rid of these cells. So now you might ask, well, when we talk about early treatment, what do we mean? And if you look at the medical literature, the definition varies between researchers that do the study or the available cohorts. In general, when people talk about early treatment, they talk about treatment within the first 3 months of infection. The very early treatment would be the first month, I would say, but in general, early treatment could span about 3 months. Some studies even are more lenient and say 6 months. To me, between 3 to 6 months is now early chronic stage. You know, the very early ART is usually the first month or at least the first 3 months. Next. Jessica, if there are more questions, just let me know, because I still can't see it. When we talk about early infection, there is a staging system called the Fibic stage that tries to look at, you know, the different testing we have and categorize people into, you know, Fibic 1 to Fibic 4, which is generally the acute infection period, the first month or so of infection. And here, this graph shows the viral load in the blood, so amount of virus in the blood in the line, the red line, and the x-axis shows days from onset of infection. So you can see that when HIV comes into the body, the first, you know, 5 days or so, the virus is probably in the mucosa, like the rectum, the vagina. It's still, you know, increasing in number there, and suddenly it then rises very fast in the blood. And when it reaches a level that it's detectable in the blood, and in this graph it's 100 copies, but it could be 50 copies or 20 copies, the period from the time the body has the virus to detection in the blood is called eclipse phase. And then the virus increases very fast in the blood, and then when the virus is very high, then symptoms of fever, headache, sore throat, diarrhea, you know, large lymph node, then we kind of see that in the first 2-3 weeks. Now, this line shows the stage of Fibic 1, which is the first 2 weeks of infection. Here, the body has not yet made antibody to the virus, and only if you do viral load, you can detect the virus. And the next stage, Fibic 2, this is when we're starting to start seeing the symptoms. And here, by testing, we can see P24. And this is another 5 days. And then Fibic 3. And between Fibic 2 and 3, the most sensitive antibody test that is used now, the fourth generation, can already detect that. And so Fibic 3, people have antibody. And so if they go for regular HIV testing, they definitely will be tested positive at this point. And here we think that the reservoir or the latently infected cells are established very early, you know, within days and weeks of infection. And then the next stage is phobic 4, which again, this is still the first month of infection here. If we do testing, we start to see some bands on Western blot. Next.
So, Jenta, just before you move on, there was a great question that came in, which was, during the eclipse phase, or that first 5 days, it looks like, is there a chance to take a medication so that you don't get HIV?
I think so. You know, this is very hard to prove. I mean, it's been shown in animal studies that if post-exposure prophylaxis, or PEP, is given very early after exposure, it could perhaps stop infection, but it's just in the mucosa. And so in people, I think it's impossible to prove that for certain, but, you know, studies, cohorts of people who take PEP that have had very high-risk exposure have shown that they have not been infected. So I think that it really depends on how early you can take HIV medications. I mean, if it's, you know, the virus has had time to infect more cells in the mucosa, then maybe it's harder. But definitely, I think that's a real possibility. So this comes to PEP, which is, you know, when someone has a possible exposure and takes HIV medications, and generally we say it has to be taken within 72 hours for it to be effective. But, you know, the earlier the better. I mean, if for instance, people who work in the hospital and get needle stick, you know, if they can take it almost within the first hour or two after they were possibly exposed, I mean, that the earlier is better. And so that, you know, you take for a period of a month. You do HIV testing before and after. So that's a bit different. That's different to early ART, because in PEP you're not yet infected and you're taking PEP to prevent infection. Early ART we only give if the person has been confirmed to be HIV infected, has a positive HIV test, whether this is just testing for nucleic acid or viral load and the antibody still negative. If there's even detection of virus, and that is considered positive. So in our studies in Thailand, we actually detect people very early. They just have the viral load detectable, but everything else is negative. And we can test now, you know, even within the first week of exposure. But even if you don't have those capabilities, the new antibody test, like the fourth generation immunoassay, which is now being used all around the world, because it also detects P24 and antibody, by 2 or 3 weeks from infection, the test would already become positive. So I think we may not know what stage people are in acute infection, but with the new test, we now have the capability of identifying most people who are just been infected. Next. So when we try, why do we try to give ART very early? I think, you know, you have seen the graph of the viral load in the previous slides, that how fast the virus takes over and increase in number in the body. So if you can start HIV medication very early, we can try to protect cells, new cells that are not yet infected, from being infected, and reduce the amount of virus significantly. And so here we're preventing more cells that could become latently infected cells. And so people who are treated early have smaller reservoir or numbers of infected cells. Next. So here is a figure that Nicolas Chaumont from Montreal did. And on the top, figure A, shows a CD4 T cell, how it goes from naive cell, which is, you know, like baby cell, not yet experienced, not yet exposed to anything. And then when it gets to be exposed to infection or other foreign antigen, then it starts to develop into memory cells. And you can see it goes from stem cell, central memory, transitional effector, and then it goes to terminally differentiated in purple, and then it dies. So what is important here is that the two blue cells are the cells that are most likely to be latently infected. They're most likely to stay and live for a long time and harbor these viruses. So in B, you can see that if people start treatment late, the virus has had many years of infecting more cells, and a lot of the dark blue cells, even after taking ART for years, you know, this decreases a little bit, but there's still a lot left. If we treat early, we start off with smaller reservoir size, and even after years of treatment, we have much, much smaller reservoir. And we think that some data that we have generated and others show that the cells that exist in people who are treated early are the shorter-lived cells, which are, you know, some are the red one or the orange one. And so those are more likely to die and be killed. So we might be not only impacting how much, but the quality of the reservoir, what cells are infected as well.
So, Gintanath, there was another great question that came in, which is, if somebody comes for treatment after they've had HIV for some time and their CD4 count is very low, but they're started on treatment, you know, at that visit, would you still consider that early?
Oh, would we still consider that early? Is that the question?
Correct. So early, is early related to when they start treatment, or is early related to when they've gotten infected?
So, there are two things, you know. If we talk about early infection or acute infection, we're talking about how long have you been infected. So early infection would be, you know, you've just been infected in the past 3 months. And early treatment means, you know, how long from the time you were infected to when you start treatment. And, you know, in general, people who have very low CD4 are generally, you know, infected for a long time. This is not necessarily true for all people, because we definitely have seen people who test to have acute infection or early infection that have low CD4. But in general, if your CD4 is less than 350 or less than 200, particularly if there are symptoms, the likelihood is that the person has been infected for years. Now, I do think that, you know, starting treatment at any time point, even if you're no longer in the early phase, is so important. Because what you would like to see, what we would like to see, is that the virus becomes undetectable in the blood, no matter when someone starts treatment. Because that helps to improve health, immune system is functions much better, and helps to prolong life and you know, healthy life. So even if treatment cannot be started in the first 3 months, it should be started as soon as someone is diagnosed with HIV, whatever time that may be.
Great. Thank you. That's a great clarification.
Next, please. So I'd like to now talk about a few cohorts that have reported on people who are treated early and how that relates to remission. And then again, remission is the ability to have viral load that is undetectable in the blood without, you know, taking HIV medications. So Visconti cohort, many of you may have heard of this. This is probably the most famous cohort of remission cases. So this is in France, and it's a cohort of 14 people. They were treated within the first 2-3 months of infection. They were on for about 3 years. And then for one reason or another, they came off treatment, And now they've been followed for many, many years, and they have undetectable virus in the blood. And we're not sure why that is, and there's no single test that we could that could be done to say who would control or not. Next. So this is the Visconti cohort, are sometimes called post-treatment controllers. They are different to elite controllers because the Visconti cohort, they had to be treated before and treated early, and then they stopped treatment. Elite controllers are people who have never been on treatment at all, but from the very early times, they can control their virus to undetectable levels, and they have pretty good immune system as well. And so that is likely determined by genetics, and certain people have genetics that are better, that help them to control the virus. Another group are long-term non-progressors. So these are people who may have virus in the blood that we can readily measure, but they have maintained with very high, very good CD4 for a long time, because normally we expect that after being infected for, 4 to 6 years, people start having lower and lower CD4 as they go on. But these people could maintain high CD4 for 10 years or more. And we also don't quite understand why people can do that. Next. So with the Visconti cohort, researchers now are doing more testing to try to understand why they are able to control. It's not very clear why this is, but this is a subject that is ongoing research, and I think we would have more data in the future when we have more cohorts that are able to spontaneously control. But these people, when researchers took virus out and tried to grow the virus can grow very well. So it's not that the virus is defective, but there's some reason that these people can control virus. And we think that early treatment may be part of the answer.
So, Jintanat, a few questions have come in, but I'll just ask for the two related to the Visconti cohort.
Okay.
The first is can they transmit the virus?
Yeah. I think it's possible. In general, we say that if people have undetectable viral load in the blood, they are at a very low risk of transmitting HIV. So we think that people who are in remission, like the Visconti people, they would have similar risk of transmitting virus as someone who's on treatment and have undetectable viral load. I mean, you can't say for certain that that's 100% true, but I think the risk of transmitting may still be there, but it would be very low and probably similar to people who are on treatment.
Great. And actually, it's kind of related to the last slide, which is, what is the difference between elite controllers and long-term non-progressors? Are the non-progressors on ARVs?
Yeah, both elite controllers and long-term non-progressors, generally the definition is that they are not on ART. The elite controllers are probably, I would say, have better ability to control HIV because they can both control the virus to undetectable level and also have high CD4. The long-term non-progressors are like maybe one level down in their ability to control the virus because they still have virus in the blood. Usually it's not very high, but it's detectable. And then they have normal CD4. And then I would say, there are some certain genetics that are associated with these innate ability to control the virus, but we don't totally understand how that happens.
Great. Thank you.
So the Mississippi child is also another very interesting case. And if you can go to the next one. So this is a child who started treatment very early. The mother did not have prenatal care, so was at a very high risk of transmitting. The mother was not on HIV medication, so you know the mother could transmit virus to the baby. So the doctor gave triple drug therapy, which is normally reserved for treatment, very early, 30 hours after birth. The HIV testing at birth came back positive, so the baby continued ART. But the baby then was lost to follow-up at about a year and a half after. And when the baby and the mother came back at 27, came back later, was found to have undetectable viral load in the blood. And so that was very puzzling, because normally you would not expect someone to have undetectable viral load if they're not on HIV medication. So the baby actually remained in remission, undetectable viral load, for 27 months, and then in 2014 rebounded and then was resumed on treatment, and now still on treatment. So the next slide shows how that happens. You can see the birth, HIV was detected, begin ART very early, stop ART, and then long-term remission for 27 months, which is much longer than we would expect. You know, in general, people who come off treatment would rebound in the first month after coming off treatment. So this is a very long time. And then now is on treatment after viral load came back in the blood. So what did we learn from this? The field was very excited about this, because for the first time we saw that very early treatment may have something to do with remission, and particularly early treatment can be used to really restrict reservoir size, and that we have seen now that long-term remission, I mean, long-term is relative, so 2 years of remission is possible through this case. Next. So this is a model that Dr. Debbie Prasad and her team, who reported the Mississippi child, created. So you can see the first column, timing of ART initiation. This goes from very early, within 2 days, as in the Mississippi child, through early, through late, and no treatment. And then if you move over to the right, you can see this picture that shows that if you start very early, the amount of virus and the amount of cells that are infected, and here in blue, the latently infected cells, there are very few cells. And then the number of infected cells increases as the treatment is started later and no treatment. Now, the next column is remission duration, which suggests that if you start treatment early, you have longer remission. I would say this is not a proven, this is not yet proven. We think that small reservoir will help in terms of remission, but we don't know if that is really true. We need more studies for that. And so when someone has a small reservoir and they're on ART, then that prevents them having more infected cells. And if you look on the far right, viremia reestablishment, here you can see that, you know, in persons who are not on treatment, you know, there's ongoing infection of new cells, and so the reservoir size is much larger. Next.
So, Dr. Jishnath, there was just a question, which is, does it matter when the child gets infected, so in utero versus through birth?
Yeah, probably, I would say, because if they're infected in utero, they have had infection for longer. And so, you know, longer infection usually equates to more latently infected cells. In the Mississippi child, you know, it's debatable whether the child was infected in utero or infected. If it's in utero, it's probably very close to birth. But I think that that is a factor that we have to look into. And there are studies like T1115 that Impact Network is doing at many sites around the world that is looking at giving early, very early treatment, like the Mississippi child, and they will also be testing to try to see whether, you know, children are in utero or infected at birth or through breastfeeding. So there are some other early cohorts in adults. Next. The fresh cohort is very unique. In the fresh cohort, they do twice weekly testing of women, young women who are at risk for HIV. And so they're enrolled in the study when they're still HIV negative, and then they get, you know, counseling as well as there's job programs and other things that to help them, and they get HIV testing twice weekly. So then they're identified extremely early, and then they're treated right away. And so here there's an opportunity to really stop the virus from increasing in numbers in the body, preserving immune system. And they're doing many testing on the samples to understand how early treatment affects the immune system. Next. So this is the fresh cohort is done in South Africa. So another cohort that the U.S. military has been doing since 2009 and actually is the model for the fresh cohort, and this is done in East Africa and Thailand, enrolling large numbers of participants who are at risk for HIV and then doing twice-weekly testing of virus, and over 100 cases have been identified. And so what we want to know here also is that what does the very early virus in these people look like? Because this would actually help us in designing preventive vaccine, and we want to understand what the early immune markers are in acute infection. I can talk about this a little bit more. Next. So this is done in three countries in East Africa and also in Thailand. So with these early treatment cohorts, you know, we have an opportunity to identify or to understand how reservoir develops, you know, what cells are infected first, and, you know, how latently infected cells are established. And so this would help us to, once we understand this, it would help us to develop strategies to try to reduce the reservoir. We also want to understand how the body reacts to the virus very early and to develop immune strategies. And for preventive vaccine, if you imagine, you know, we can now understand what virus gets through and becomes the virus that infects the body. And so this would help vaccine researchers to say, well, if we're developing preventive vaccines, how much do we have to cover? What types of virus we have to try to cover and prevent? So this is very critical to development of preventive vaccines. And, you know, obviously these people are very unique. They have very low reservoir. They have good immune system. They may be asked to participate in cure trials in the future, and that's exactly what we're doing in Thailand, is asking people in the cohort that we've treated early whether they would be interested in remission trials. Next. So acute infection, particularly people infected in the first 2 weeks or 4 weeks, they're rare. You know, everyone who's infected with HIV has gone through the acute period. It's just that it's very difficult to identify. It would require the person to walk into an HIV testing center very early. And the testing technologies, even though it's very good now, the fourth generation antibody testing can detect infection from like 2-3 weeks. The first 2 weeks of infection still requires special testing with detecting virus, which is often not done. In order to detect acute infection very early, you know, people would need to be tested very frequently. to try to capture that. So if someone get tested once a year, you know, we might have missed that period. And then the other thing is that, you know, even if someone tests positive in the clinic that day, they might not have HIV medication that day because the medication would have to be ordered or it's not there. So then you might be diagnosed very early, but if you're not treated very early, then that opportunity is lost. So I think that, you know, the field is now more and more recognizing that acute infection is an urgent medical issue. If we have the opportunity to diagnose someone in acute infection, we have the obligation to try to help that person have the best chance of healthy immune system, low amount of virus, by trying to start treatment that same day or at least the next day or two. But we cannot wait for weeks because they would be out of the acute period. Next. So now, how does this early treatment relate to cure? And I think, you know, the model that the field has been working on is that people with low reservoir, they may be at a better chance of having remission of cure. But we don't know that. I mean, that has not been proven. So there is a potential risk for a therapeutic misconception. People who are treated very early in these cohorts, including mine, might come into a cure trial because they truly believe that they're going to be cured, which is not something we can it's not something we can deliver, and it's not something that is likely going to happen. It's likely that most people, even people who are treated very early, will not be in remission, but we will learn a lot from these trials on how people respond to different treatments. But this therapeutic misconception is very important. And the ethical issue is that people who are treated early are healthy. You know, most people have never had symptoms from HIV, and a lot of the HIV cure trials require treatment interruption, which is not like the old way of doing treatment interruption. It's being done very carefully. For instance, in our studies in Thailand, we do viral load testing every 3 days to make sure that if someone has viral rebound, we can restart treatment immediately. So it's safer, but there is still potential risk of increasing the reservoir if someone stops treatment or other risks. So at this early stage, for the individual who will come into the cure trial, there's higher risk than rewards. And so this is something that we, as a field, have to really, you know, decide very carefully how we move forward. Next. So in conclusion, early treatment has been shown that it can preserve CD4. People who are treated early have higher CD4. Their immune system is healthier. The inflammation that can be associated with, you know, heart disease and other types of diseases in the long run, inflammation is less. We don't know if early treatment will help prevent heart disease or anything else. We don't know that, but at least the inflammation is less. It's not completely gone, but it's much better than in chronic HIV. And the reservoir size is lower in early treated persons. So the acknowledgement slides show the institutions that provide information for this talk, and then my institution is the U.S. military. So thank you. And any questions that I could answer?
Great. Well, there's actually quite a few. So I'll see if you hit *7, you can unmute your line, and you can go ahead and ask Dr. Tizen that directly. But there have been several that have come in the chat function. Just wait a moment to see if anybody I would like to say it out loud. So hit *7 once again if you'd like to ask your question directly. Okay, well, just in the interest of time, I'll start going through this list. So there's quite a few. So the first is, would early treatment negatively affect immune responses to the virus?
Yes, that is not well understood. It's possible that when someone gets treated very early, the virus goes down very fast, so the body has not yet had time to start making immune response to the virus. So that is a real possibility. Now, there are some new data showing that even though the quantity of the immune response may be lower in people who start treatment early, maybe the right cells are being preserved, so the quality might be better. So, you know, the cells, as you know, when HIV happens, starts making more viruses in the body, the cells get exhausted and then they don't function very well. And we have some early data from our cohort showing that people who are treated very early, their cells are not as exhausted. But we don't know what that means, you know, if people come off treatment. What will that mean? Will that be better in terms of controlling the virus? We don't know. But definitely the quantity of immune response is likely lower in people who start treatment earlier.
So I have a follow-up question to that. So from the Visconti cohort, it seems like some of the individuals came off treatment and they had a little blip and then they returned back to undetectable. If you restart treatment early, is there a chance that you might lose that ability for these early immune cells that were preserved to fight off the virus?
Yeah. You mean when people interrupt treatment in the trials?
Correct.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is a risk. You know, if we interrupt treatment as part of a trial and we restart treatment very early, we do lose the chance of seeing whether people can go up and come down again. But it's a balance between, you know, how long can we wait? And the longer we wait, then there's higher chance of the reservoir being reseeded. So we don't have a good answer of what is the threshold that we should restart treatment in these cure trials. But I think with the early phase studies that we are involved now, it's probably better to be safer than to risk more, because it's already risky for the volunteers. Yeah.
So another question that came in a little bit earlier was, why do some people who maintain strict adherence to ART have treatment failure?
Yeah, so some people, I think, are infected with strains that are already resistant to the virus, resistant to the medication. So even if they have strict adherence to the drugs, they could still have failure. That probably is the main reason, I would say. And then another reason could be the drugs are not getting into the body very well, not getting absorbed very well, and that could be another possibility.
Great. So one other question that came in around the Visconti cohort was, did the post-treatment controllers possess the genes that typically confer quasi-immunity to disease progression, as identified in the majority of elite controllers? So just for some people that don't know, this idea that there are some genes that identify elite controllers that they all have in common, although not a majority. And so the question is, did some of these post-treatment controllers have some of those genes?
Yeah, from the publication, it doesn't seem to be the case. It seems that these post-treatment controllers don't have the favorable HLA that have been associated with elite controllers. And again, elite controllers, not everyone also have these protective HLA. I mean, some people don't. So in the Visconti, they also made the point that some of the post-treatment controllers had actually HLA that we had previously considered to be not favorable or associated with worse disease. So so no, not typically, but I think there's more to the question, and we don't really know the answer.
So there was another just question I just came in, which is great on this idea of early treatment. Why is early treatment, does it appear to be effective when some antivirals show poor accessibility to access certain reservoirs? So why does early treatment work even when some therapies don't?
I didn't quite understand that. Can you?
So it just says, why does early treatment appear to be effective when some antivirals show poor accessibility to access certain reservoirs like tissue?
Oh, tissue, yeah. That is a very good question. I mean, we say early treatment is better, and this is based on measuring in the blood. So we don't know, actually, if early treatment is also much, much better in the tissue. In our studies, we have measured amount of virus in the gut, and it seems lower. So you can imagine that early treatment could be better for the tissue because there has been less time for the virus to replicate in tissue compared to people who did not start early treatment. But once treatment is started, how treatment gets to the tissue probably is not different whether someone starts early or late. It's more, I think early treatment may be better in terms of preventing more virus to get to the tissue rather than, once it's there, maybe it's not doing as much, doing something. It's probably the same as late treatment.
So this is the last question. There's a few people on who are actually implementing both P1115 and have an early capture cohort.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wondering if the question just came in with, are the goals of P1115 the same as early capture cohorts? Is it to try to identify markers that could be used for future cure trials, or is it trying to replicate the Mississippi trial?
I think for P1115, I think both, trying to see whether more children can be like the Mississippi child. The study has a component which has treatment interruption, but that component will only happen if they have to make another decision whether that component will happen. But once you do treatment interruption trials, then you could try to identify if anyone control, and you could also try to identify markers for control. You can do that if your cohort have some people who control versus not control. And I think the P1115 eventually will try to do both. The early capture cohorts, right now, all the early treatment cohorts, whether in children or in adults, are just trying to understand what does early treatment do to the virus, to the immune system. And then the next phase of cure trials would be looking at how these interventions work in early treated people, and if they come off treatment, are there any controllers? If there are, then there's an opportunity to look at baseline samples to see if you can find any markers that could tell you who will control or not.
Great. Well, just in the last minute, I'll once again remind everybody to *7 if you'd like to ask a question. And if not, I just want to thank you so much, Dr. Cincinnati, and just remind everyone that we do have another webinar next week, the fourth in the series, which is focused on the ethics of HIV cure research. So thank you so much, and have a wonderful afternoon, evening, or day, depending on where you are in the world.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, bye.